Calls grow around the world to get everyone to mask up. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll speak with the founder of the global movement, Masks for All. Do you wear a mask when you leave your house? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, why the pandemic is sparking more meatless meals for all of you out there. And some good news to share. It's our What's Good Wednesdays. That's later. But first, this hour, the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health reports 46,944 cases. That's 502 more than were reported just a day ago. Florida has surpassed 2,000 total deaths from COVID-19 now, with 55 new recorded deaths. The cumulative toll is 2,052. In Northeast Florida, we have just shy of 3,000 reported cases and 73 deaths, including a new death, a 70-year-old woman from Duval County. Now, amidst these growing numbers, Florida continues its reopening. And as that happens, some of you are wearing masks when you go out, and some of you aren't. There's no mandate in this state to do so. The wearing of masks in the pandemic has become yet another cultural flashpoint. This week, a video went viral when a Costco customer posted an angry video rant on social media when he was asked to leave his neighborhood Costco for not wearing a mask. That is the store policy there. Take a listen.
I'll just put you on my 3,000 follower Instagram feed, mostly locals.
Hi, everyone. I work for Costco, and I'm asking this member to put on a mask because that is our company policy. So either wear the mask
or... And I'm not doing it because I woke up in a free country.
Have a great day.
So you're going to take this cart from me.
Sir, have a great
full
day.
Full of stuff.
You are no longer welcome here in our warehouse. You need to leave.
So as that happens, Duval County Public Schools is sending out surveys to teachers and families about what they would like to see in school next year. And they're asking parents and teachers whether they think everybody on school property should be wearing a mask. What do you think about that? Amidst all this, there's a global movement to get everyone masked up because data shows if at least 80% of the population is wearing a mask out in public, virus transmission goes way down. Jeremy Howard is the co-founder of the Masks for All movement, and he's on the line. Hey, Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you. You're a research scientist at the University of San Francisco and the founder of a lab that provides researchers the opportunity to focus on these critical medical research issues. You are the face of Masks for All. Before we get into how the different states are dealing with this, tell us about Masks for All.
Sure. It's a group of volunteers like me who are scientists. And in fact, we organized a letter that has been signed by over 100 of the world's top scientists, including two Nobel Prize winners, the editor-in-chief of the world's top science journal, Nature, the editor-in-chief of the world's top medical journal, The Lancet, the medical chairs of some of the country's top academic medical hospitals. And what this letter says is it's addressed to every governor in the U.S., and it says we need mask requirements. And so what Masks for All has been doing is it's been organizing and helping to bring together the scientific research around this and to communicate it to policymakers and to the public, because as you mentioned in the intro, if most people wear masks, then we can actually stop this pandemic in its tracks.
How many states are currently requiring masks for residents when they leave their homes?
In the U.S., it's up to 14 states already, and in fact, worldwide, mask requirements cover about 75% of the world's population. So those states that haven't done this yet are really trailing both in terms of the policy and the science on this, and I'm pretty worried for those states like Florida that they're going to see a pretty bad second outbreak and going to cause a second lockdown, and it's going to really mess up the economy and jobs and cause a lot more deaths.
And have you had a response yet from Governor Ron DeSantis here in Florida to your open letter? You're asking him to require cloth masks to be worn in all public places in Florida, like stores, on transportation, and in public buildings.
No, we've heard nothing.
Okay. So, obviously, different states are handling this differently. What's your reaction to those who are pushing back against a company like, say, Costco, which has a store policy that you can't enter the store without a mask? People are claiming their freedom, their rights are being infringed upon. What's your response to that as a public health expert?
Well, at a public health level, we do, as a country, sometimes make a decision to infringe on rights. For example, you don't have the right to go into a shop without wearing pants or something over the bottom half of your body. And there's a good reason for that. I wouldn't want to go and sit in a bar and sit on a bar stool and find my previous person had been sitting there was not wearing pants. That would be gross. And so we have laws in place to stop people from doing gross things. Unfortunately, they're needed because some people do. And let me tell you, not wearing a mask is far more gross and far more dangerous than not wearing pants, because what happens if you don't wear a mask? About half of the infections that happen for COVID-19 happen from people who don't know they're sick. And wearing a mask actually nearly totally stops the droplets that come out of your mouth when you talk or yawn or whatever. And so they do a fantastically good job of stopping transmission. So if you go into Costco and don't wear a mask, you are putting every worker there at risk and every customer there at risk. And so what Costco is saying is, that's not okay. And, of course, they have every right mm-hmm. to do that, just like they say you can't smoke here. You have to wear pants in here. You know, these are basic public health things, which, you know, the vast majority of people do because they know it's the right thing to do. And unfortunately, some people, you just have to say, you know, this is actually the rule, and it's for the health of the community.
And Jeremy, as you pointed out, the modeling on this suggests that you need 80% of a population wearing masks to stop the spread of coronavirus. But in the majority of states that aren't requiring masks, fewer than half the population are using them. I think that's probably about right here in Florida, given my very unscientific observation. When I go around this community of Jacksonville and I go into Publix or I go wherever there are some people congregating, about half the people I see out and about are wearing masks and half aren't. And so that is not enough, you're saying, to really stop the transmission, correct?
Correct. And to be clear, you know, this is very understandable. The peak public health bodies in this country really let us down on this. There was a shortage of medical grade masks during the pandemic. There still is. And that's obviously a problem. And then rather than saying, you know what, masks do work, that's why our healthcare workers need them, but they need them most, so please, you know, don't use them until we have enough of the healthcare workers, the Surgeon General went out on Twitter and said masks don't work. And, you know, and the CDC said don't wear a mask because it won't help. And so they were trying to do the right thing. They were trying to protect the supply for healthcare workers. But in the process, they deceived the public. And so now people are rightly saying, wait, what is it? Do they work or not? You know, first you tell us they don't. Now you tell us we have to wear them. Now the truth is they work the whole time.
And now we're
in this messy situation.
Sure. And they do work. And in other countries with higher mask usage, they've had far fewer deaths. Hong Kong has only had a few deaths. Czechoslovakia, the former Czechoslovakia, countries where it's mandated have seen very few deaths. Now, that said, some of these countries have more of an authoritarian cultural and political tradition. Here in this country, our culture and our politics seem to be getting in the way of public health. This whole idea of don't tread on me, I can do what I want, I won't be told what to do. The government can't force me to do these things. How, in your view, is that exacerbating this problem?
Well, you know, interestingly, the two regions you mentioned, Hong Kong and the Czech Republic, are both countries where the citizenry did it without the help of their government. So Hong Kong, you know, is one of, if you want to put it in those terms, it's one of the kind of most disobedient populations in the world.
Well, sure, yeah.
They have a figurehead leader put in there by Beijing. And Carrie Lam was saying, you're not allowed to wear a mask. And the population said, I'm sorry, but we're wearing masks because we don't want to die and we don't want our economy to tank. And they did anyway. And they now have fewer than 10 deaths. So for the whole region, like thousands of times less. The Czech Republic, they were so sick of their government's mishandling of the crisis that a YouTube influencer got up and said, hey, everybody, you know, we can't wait for the government to save us. We all got to wear masks anyway. And so they did it without the government's help. So I think, you know, maybe there is a chance that, that in the U.S., which does have a very kind of free and independent spirit, maybe something can happen. Somebody can spur this on and have something similar happen in the U.S. and have everybody start wearing masks.
Well,
you're
certainly one voice in that fight. We're speaking right now with Jeremy Howard. He's a research scientist and the co-founder of the Global Masks for All movement. The hashtag Masks for All has gotten popular on social media in recent weeks. And as we talk about this, what are your thoughts about mask wearing? Are you wearing a mask when you leave your home, when you go to the grocery store or out and about anywhere? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Mike is in Mandarin. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hello. So I went to Savannah Sunday morning, left my house, got to the border just about 7 a.m.
Uh-huh.
There were no checkpoints going into Georgia. There was nothing coming south on I-95 coming into Florida, no checkpoints. But I came back yesterday afternoon, there was a checkpoint. So everyone had to get off. All the cars had to stay to the right, trucks to the left. We crept along the highway for 40 minutes. All the cars around me that I saw all had Florida license plates. All they asked, where are you coming from? Georgia. Okay, they let us go. But yet all the trucks were in the left lane, just breezed on through. And they had license plates, Virginia, South Carolina, Illinois, et cetera. They didn't have to stop at all. So I'd just like to have somebody maybe explain that to me as to why that is.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Mike, but I appreciate the update on the checkpoint situation at the Florida-Georgia border. You know, Jeremy Howard, Georgia, if anything, has been more lax than Florida in how it has dealt with coronavirus. We have seen checkpoints at the state line. They have been criticized because, as the caller pointed out, people coming into Florida from other states can be bringing the virus with them. They were initially stopping people with New York license plates. I don't know if they're still doing that, though. We'll have to check on that. But since we are here to talk about masks, do you see some of these other measures, like a checkpoint, as being anywhere near as effective as what you're saying, which is widespread mask usage?
There is one other thing which can really help, which is social distancing. And so in particular, the combination of masks plus social distancing works pretty well. When you speak, you create, if you're sick, and remember, you don't necessarily know if you are, you create this germ cloud around you, which can go out around 15 feet, and it can stay there for around 10 minutes, particularly indoors. But if you're wearing a mask, that cloud is only about 3 feet wide, and it doesn't last very long at all. So the combination of saying to people, like when they're out shopping or in public transit or whatever, stay 6 feet apart and keep your mask on, that's a really great combination.
Yeah. So the combination of wearing a mask and social distancing, and I would think, too, not going into large groups. Isn't that helpful, too?
Yeah.
Small groups?
Yeah, that's a super important one. Yeah, in fact, you know, there's this scientific thing, term called the dispersion factor for a pandemic, which is how much is it spread in big groups. And for COVID-19, yeah, definitely spread by big groups. We see this, you know, we saw just the CDC at a recent Arkansas church service, a single church service left three people dead. And particularly large groups where there's singing, like church services, or loud talking or yelling, like sports events or ceremonies, particularly indoors, those are very, very bad news.
Yeah. I'm going to my first restaurant meal this weekend with some friends. It's going to be outside on a patio, and the restaurant, you know, is going to have people seated far apart out on that patio. I mean, it's the first time I've kind of felt comfortable doing something like that. And it'll be interesting to see if people are wearing masks when they sit down to eat. But in the meantime, let's go to some calls, lots of calls for Jeremy Howard.
I want to mention, outside is pretty safe.
Yeah.
Know, transmission outside is about 20 times less than inside. So, you know, having outdoor seating is a great benefit of being in Florida.
In Florida right now, sure. Jammed lines, meanwhile, for Jeremy Howard, the founder of the global movement known as Masks for All. Janet in St. Augustine. Hi, Janet.
Yes, good morning, Melissa. First of all, thank you for your wonderful program.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a first-time caller, but I just wanted to say that the fellow who was so upset about Costco, he said he woke up in a free country. Well, that's absolutely correct. He was free to leave. No one was forcing him to shop there. My comment, though, is the sign that we have here in St. Augustine, no shirt, no shoes, now should add no mask, no service. I'm just amazed at the people who are not wearing a mask. I mean, it's really no big deal. Another comment is years ago, I'm in my 70s, so years ago, I remember the comment that Khrushchev said that we in the United States would freedom ourselves to death. So I think we may be seeing that come to pass.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's funny that you remember that, Janet. And thank you for listening and calling. And, you know, it's funny you say that because I have several emails here from listeners all saying the same thing. They just wrote, no shoes, no shirt, no mask, no service. So that's being echoed in a lot of other emails coming in, Janet. Thank you for that. Frank in Orange Park. Hi, Frank. What are your thoughts?
I wear a mask, and also I wear gloves. Now,
okay.
People who wear rubber gloves are protected, but what they touch has the virus on it, and if they touch something else, they pass the virus on. So I wear cotton gloves, and I keep the cotton gloves moist with a disinfectant. So anything I touch, automatically that virus is killed, and if I touch anything else, I don't pass the virus on. That's my comment, and I hope maybe your guest might comment on that.
Sure. Thank you, Frank. Jeremy, is Frank's method an effective way to slow the transmission of COVID?
It's a useful precaution. I will say, you know, the CDC does say that what we call surface-mediated transmission, so that's transmission through touching things, is kind of pretty rare and speculative. We don't even know if it happens. So I think, you know, hand hygiene and gloves is a useful precaution, but the vast majority of transmission, we believe, is through the air. So I actually think the previous caller pointing out the no shirt, no shoes, no masks, no service, you know, I would get out to your local shop if they don't have that rule and say, tell the manager, I don't want to be shopping here while I'm unsafe. Because remember, wearing a mask is not enough to keep the wearer safe. You actually need the people around you wearing a mask because you actually need to stop the droplets while they're still big at the source. So, you know, maybe we could get a lot of pressure on the businesses and say, like, hey, you know, hey, Walmart, why aren't you doing the same as Costco to keep me safe? Why do you still have unmasked people in the shop, you know, putting my family in danger?
Chuck at the beaches. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit strange because outdoors is... go on.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah. Okay, so I wear a mask. I social distance 6 feet. I carry hand washing soap with me, and I wash my hands constantly. And what I've noticed is whether the general population is young, middle-aged, or old, they don't social distance. They'll get 18 inches from you, talk to you, and you have to back up and you have to say, please, can I have some social distancing? I don't know if it's because they don't know, they don't care, they don't understand the physics, and that's what it is. If you follow the physics and you keep the 6 foot distance, you wear the mask, you wash your hands, you're going to be a lot safer. And so I had a question. I was listening to an epidemiologist, and he said that most viruses have like a 6 month time frame, And then, and one of the things is, you know, 80% of the people who get it don't get really sick, and they develop antibodies. And over a period of 6 months, a lot of times these viruses will become less prevalent and less as we develop the antibodies, et cetera. So that's a, that might be a good thing that we might be. And the unfortunate thing, and then this is the other thing, is the cure worse than the disease. When you have millions of people who can't work, and you're going to a restaurant, you're going to be 6 feet from the people around you, which is not much different than being in Lowe's. Why is it that Lowe's can be open, but the restaurants can't? Thank you, Chuck.
And, you know, Jeremy Howard, I've observed the same dynamic Chuck's talking about. In particular, if you go to, say, Publix or any grocery store, it's virtually impossible to stay 6 feet away from everybody in there. And I always wear a mask. My kids do. My husband, you know, whenever any of us go in, we wear masks. But you can't maintain that in some places. What about that?
Right. So it's useful to keep in mind that your chance of getting infected or making somebody else infected and how bad that infection is depends on how long you remain in this germ cloud. So when you're shopping, it's definitely less risky. We're not seeing, it doesn't seem like there's as much transmission happening in shops. And I think it's because people are always moving around. So you're not sitting in somebody's germ cloud for 15 to 30 minutes. Restaurants are big spreaders of this disease. We're seeing a lot of transmission in restaurants, and that's because people are sitting in the same place for a long period of time, and there's often some kind of air conditioning that's actually blowing the germs across to the next table. So you've got to keep in mind that if you're moving around, you're much safer, but if you're like at a restaurant sitting next to a table and somebody there is infected and nobody knows it, they're quite likely to make you sick, particularly indoors.
Lots of comments from Twitter, Facebook, and emails. Josh emails the show. I went to Publix last week. 90% of people had a mask on. I went back yesterday, the first day of our so-called reopening, and almost no one besides the employees had one on. On Facebook, Janice writes, wearing a mask makes you a responsible adult. Valerie says the same thing. Why is it so difficult to put a mask on? It seems like adulting to me. Is this, what do you think about that, Jeremy? People saying you're being a child if you don't do this.
Yeah, I agree. We actually did some surveys of what people feel when they see somebody not wearing a mask. And the kind of responses we got were selfish, thoughtless, you know, uncooperative, unkind. There's definitely a view that, you know, when we know that wearing a mask is the thing that can help keep our economy open, can help save jobs, can help save lives, particularly of the elderly, the disadvantaged, people of color. The you know, when we see people not wearing a mask, a lot of folks look at that and think, like, it's like, I just don't get how anybody could not bother.
But clearly it's a divisive issue. Here's a tweet from Nancy. I took my dog to our vet of 25 years. And they did not want a social distance and would not wear masks until I insisted. They were huffy about it. I now have a new vet. So you see people voting with their feet. They either storm out of a business in rage that they're made to wear a mask and say, I'll never shop here again. Or they say, if you don't wear a mask and insist on mask wearing in your business, I'll never shop here again.
Yeah, but the polling on this is super strong. It's like one of the you know, this minority that don't wear them are very loud. But in the polling, this is one of the least divisive things in kind of polling history. Over 80% of Americans say they want to wear a mask. They want other people wearing a mask. Republicans and Democrats both say the same thing here. So this group of people who are demanding the freedom to make others sick, they are a small and shrinking minority.
And we have lots of calls meanwhile for you, Jeremy. We're speaking with Jeremy Howard, research scientist and founder of the global movement called Masks for All. Marcel on the South Side. Hi, Marcel.
I'm a local truck driver. I just want to say that the reason they're letting a lot of these truck drivers through from out of state is simply because they have important cargo that's probably coming in, more like sanitizers or medical supplies. And a lot of the facilities that are receiving out-of-state truck drivers are actually making the truck drivers either stay in their vehicles or actually wear a mask in order to come into the facility.
And that includes you, Marcel? Have you had that experience driving your truck?
I'm a local truck driver, and I have had that experience at a lot of facilities. And there are a lot of local facilities that don't require it because it's just we're making a one simple stop. And, you know, we're in the state of Florida. I personally wear a mask everywhere I go, but I know that definitely the out-of-state truck drivers, all the facilities that receive out-of-state freight are actually making the truck drivers actually stay in the vehicles. And the other thing is truck drivers are pretty much isolated because they're not really dealing with a lot of people and a lot out-of-state truck drivers, I should say, are pretty much isolated because they're not dealing with a lot of people a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually in a vehicle most of the day, and they're not actually, you know, unless they're actually picking up freight or actually delivering freight, they're not having to deal with a bunch of people all at the same time. So it's kind of like they're self-isolated in their own way.
Sure.
Kind of like just, you know, staying at home and going out to your store and then coming back real quick.
Right, right. Well, and I thank you for that, Marcel, and please continue to stay safe as you get out there on the roads. And we have another call about the checkpoint situation, Vanessa in Jacksonville. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention I help provide support to the I-95 checkpoint, and they are stopping everyone from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Louisiana.
But only those states?
Yes, only those states. That's what they just determined to be the states of main concern, and they just have them go around to the back and fill out some paperwork saying where they're going to be quarantined and that they know that there can be a fine if they don't.
But how do you even, that's not contact tracing. That's not really tracking people, is it? That doesn't seem like it would really do much to slow the spread. Just my off-the-cuff observation.
Yeah, it probably isn't too much. I think it's more making the people who are coming in aware in case they weren't, you know, aware. Just letting them know, hey, you are going to be required to stay inside for 14 days. And some people may not listen, but they do know that there is a penalty of a fine if they don't. And they do have to give us the address of where they're going to. So we have had,
but do they follow up and check on those people?
They have followed up on
okay.
some of those people.
All
Obviously
right.
they can't do it with everyone, but they do follow up.
Okay. Thanks, Vanessa. Jeremy Howard, what's your response to that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good idea. We're seeing how well that works in Hawaii, for instance, where everybody has to quarantine for 14 days. And it is largely on a voluntary, well, not voluntary, it's largely on a kind of self-reported basis. But there is following up going on. In Hawaii, some folks have just been put in jail for repeatedly ignoring that requirement. So, you know, and in Hawaii, we see that they're getting great results. They do have very little spread there. So trying to avoid, you know, contamination from hotspots is certainly a super idea.
Okay. AJ in Arlington. Hey, AJ, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. My question is, BJ's policy is to have people wear masks, but what about when we at the beach when you have thousands and thousands of people gathering with no social distancing? How do we control the coronavirus in that scenario? That's my question.
Sure. You know, Jeremy, the mayor of Jacksonville took some criticism when he opened the Jacksonville area beaches back up several weeks ago. He said, look, as long as people socially distance and stay in small groups, that risk at the beach is low. You yourself have pointed out you're much more likely to be exposed if you're inside than you are outdoors. What about AJ's question?
Right. You know, I think beaches are great. You know, beaches have a lot more room than your average sidewalk or you know, anything like that. I think keeping the beaches and parks open is a great idea. And what I've seen is certain parts of the media are kind of playing this up by using these powerful telephoto lenses to make it look like people are jam-packed on the beach. But when you actually look at the regular kind of wide-angle view, people are social distancing pretty well. So I'd say, yeah, do keep the 6 feet, other than obviously within a family unit, it doesn't matter. But my view is from what I've observed, the amount of social distancing happening at beaches in Texas, for instance, which is where I've been, is actually been pretty great. And the photos I've seen haven't really done it justice.
Susan and Jax. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I had to drive up from Florida up to New York for a funeral, and on the way up, we stopped in different states. And the only states that we saw people wear a mask were New Jersey and New York. And it was a big concern for us because we're here. We had to go up to a funeral in New York for an elderly relative that passed away from COVID.
Mm.
And what else is hard for us is that we don't understand why the president doesn't wear a mask. If he doesn't wear a mask, nobody else wants to wear a mask because they think if he doesn't have to wear one, why do we?
Susan, thank you for pointing that out. As you've been saying, Jeremy, some states require this, a minority of states. Florida's not one of them. And so when it's not required, people aren't, obviously many people won't wear it. Here's an email from a listener. My nail salon said they had to ask customers who refused to wear a mask to leave the other day. The customers refused because they said it wasn't the law.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack here. These are great, great points. The first thing I'll say is if you look at the states that require masks on the whole, they are states where there's been a huge death toll. And unfortunately, we see this around the world. A lot of jurisdictions don't put mask requirements into place until after a lot of people have died, which I think is crazy. You know, why don't you do it before the death toll becomes a massacre and save the lives and save the economy and save the jobs? So I think there's a real lack of prevention and precaution going on here. You know, for a state like Florida, you know, where you're starting to see the toll pick up, as we heard.
We are seeing that, but overall, when you look at the numbers and the macro, we've avoided the worst of it, at least for now in Florida.
Right.
So what about that?
Yeah, so wouldn't it be nice to keep avoiding the worst of it? So particularly as you open the beaches and you reduce the lockdowns, why not ask people to wear masks when they're indoors in public spaces, shopping, transit, it's cheap, it's easy, rather than risk becoming the next New York or the next Brazil. It's a problem when we see political role model leaders like Donald Trump not wearing a mask. You could certainly argue from a medical point of view he doesn't have to because he is tested, they say, every day, and everybody he sees has to be tested. So he's in a kind of almost unique situation in the country where the risk is low to non-existent. Everybody in the White House is required to wear a mask at all times. So the president's kind of in this nice bubble.
And he said, let me ask you too, he said he doesn't want to wear one because he doesn't like how it looks. We have seen some men in particular saying, it's unmanly. It's wimpy to wear a mask. So that you're getting into ideas about masculinity almost in a sense with this.
Yeah, so the vast majority of people in the U.S. say that they want to wear a mask and they want others to wear a mask. And as I say, the White House requires everybody else in the White House to wear a mask. But you're right. When you look at the surveys, the group that is least likely to want to wear a mask is white men in particular. And the reason most commonly specified in these surveys is because some see it as weak, which I find super weird because when you look at the military in intensive desert situations, they wear masks. I've heard stories from healthcare groups of who are working on military sites that are full of ex-special ops folks, and they say they all wear masks. I mean, a lot of super tough guys.
Right, the toughest men in the world. Well, let me ask you as a final question, Jeremy Howard, as the founder of the global movement Masks for All, you've sent an open letter to all 50 U.S. governors asking them to require the wearing of masks. What's the next move for Masks for All?
The next move is to make sure that, we do hope that this is going to happen in every state. The next move is to make sure that the behavior sticks And specifically, we needed to stick until winter, because it's really likely that in winter the transmission rates will go up because of seasonality. And, you know, that's when the second wave is most likely to happen. So we're going to start to look at doing some kind of messaging and ads and stuff like that to kind of show people why wearing a mask is a good idea, and in fact why it's an act of altruism, it's an act of love, it's an act of support for your community. And so we want people to keep doing this right up until the end of the year.
So keep wearing your masks, everyone. And thank you so much, Jeremy Howard, research scientist and founder of the Global Masks for All movement. Great to have you on this morning. Thanks for your great insights to all of our listeners.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead on the show. Later, it's a big announcement from Edible Northeast Florida. Keep listening for that. But up next.
So the livestock industry is actually 18% of our greenhouse gas emissions every year.
In our Going Green, why the pandemic is sparking more meatless eating. We'll be right back.
Miles. Herbie. Monk. They're all part of Jazz Festival Weekend. 3 days of jazz on TV, radio, streaming, and online. It's Jazz Festival Weekend on the Jacksonville Music Experience. Full lineup at wjct.org/jacksmusic.
The Voidcast from WJCT is a musical journey through Northeast Florida. I'm the host, Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw. Join me while I cut through the digital noise to share handpicked local music stories. WJCT.org/Voidcast.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, the sporadic meat shortages we've been seeing in recent weeks in this coronavirus pandemic have more people trying meatless meals, and that's good for the environment. It's our Going Green today as we learn about this. I spoke recently with Lauren Olson of WorldCentric. Take a listen. Lauren Olson, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, this pandemic has caused a lot of us to eat less meat, whether by choice or not, because there have been some shortages. Before we talk about the benefits of eating more meatless meals, let me ask you first how you see this meat shortage affecting the economy.
Well, as a result of the pandemic, I think it's close to 22 meatpacking plants have closed in the last 2 months because the workers have been developing illness and there's just not enough people to go back to work, or they need to disinfect the plant. So I think we're going to see, some cuts of meat maybe not be available at this time just because they require more work and they're just trying to get the animals slaughtered and to the market as much as possible. So from what I've read, we're looking at a decrease of 25% for the pork slaughter capacity and 10% less of the beef slaughter capacity.
Mm.
But I think, you know, in general, I don't think the consumers will see that much of a, you know, panic in terms of, I don't think it'll be anywhere close to the toilet paper panic.
Right,
that,
the run,
you know,
on toilet paper.
Experienced earlier. You know, I think all the companies that sell these sort of things, like the grocery stores and warehouse, club warehouse places, have kind of realized they need to, like, put limits on that so people aren't hoarding. And obviously, meat is a bit more difficult to hoard than toilet paper. So hopefully we can all restrain ourselves and just get whatever meat is necessary. Or you might decide that, you know, meat might not be totally necessary to your everyday diet.
Yeah. I mean, if people began going meatless at least one day a week, that's good for their health, but also the environment. Can you explain how?
Yeah, so the livestock industry is actually 18% of our greenhouse gas emissions every year. And just to put that in perspective, flying by a plane and all plane travel is about 2 to 3% of our greenhouse gas emissions. So this is quite a bit of energy that's put into meat, as well as cows tend to fart methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. So if you just cut back on meat one day a week for a full year, you're looking at saving 150 kilograms of carbon from being emitted. It's also equivalent to about 6,000 gallons of water and another 1,500 square feet of land that doesn't have to be used for animals. So just a little bit of effort on the consumer's behalf has a large impact on the environment.
It's interesting, too, to see how this is nudging us toward change. In the beginning, people really haven't had a choice. But over time, do you see this pandemic moving the American meat-eating public into a slightly healthier lifestyle?
I certainly hope so. You know, at WorldCentric, we make compostable products, and we're always urging people to develop sustainable habits and sustainable purchasing choices. So we would really like to see, you know, people look at this and maybe realize that eating meat every day is, first of all, not recommended by nutritionists, and also just very taxing on our environment, and certainly as, you know, more people and greater consumption of meat has a lot of negative effects on our environment. So now it might be a good time to explore meatless options, other ways of obtaining protein, and certainly you might be able to save some money, particularly if you go back to basics like nuts and beans and legumes of other kinds, as those are relatively cheap compared to meat. And then if you wanted to look at other meatless options, you know, like Beyond the Butcher, for example, like other, you know, meat-free meat alternatives that are available in your freezer or refrigerated section at the grocery store.
Lauren Olson, she's a sustainability expert at WorldCentric. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, time now for What's Good Wednesdays. It's our new weekly look at some positive things happening around town. We all need to accentuate the positive wherever we can. Let's begin with the local chapter of ACE, that's Architecture Construction Engineering. They elected to do some presentations via Zoom recently instead of a big event at UNF for their students. The virtual presentations, we're told by Catherine Tapuni, were fabulous, and the students were excited about completing their program. One student was recently awarded $30,000 from ACE National for her college studies as a future architect. Congrats to her. Yoga for Change, a great local nonprofit, has given the opportunity for 60 yoga teachers and 40 non-yoga teachers to submit yoga videos to YouTube. And so in doing this, they've been able to financially compensate teachers and studios for their talents. Yoga for Change is partnered with Southern Roots and Burrito Gallery and some other restaurants to raise money for this effort. And finally, the local company Fresh Jacks, an organic spice company, they've partnered with Hunger Fight to raise awareness and money for meals that feed hungry children. They're donating one meal to a child for every spice gift set sold. If you've got some good news in this pandemic that needs a shout out, email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org for What's Good Wednesdays. And up next, speaking of good news, don't miss a big announcement from our friends at Edible Northeast Florida. We'll be right back.
Baptist Health knows managing your health is still important during the COVID-19 emergency. Secure online appointments are now available and allow you to meet with your doctor from the comfort of home. More at 904-202-4YOU. Cavendish Partners PA and Michael Cavendish, a law practice supporting Jacksonville's business community, downtown, by appointment, and on the web at cavpartners.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley. The economic downturn caused by the pandemic is hurting people across the country. We talk with a Houston food pantry overwhelmed by the need.
We've had a lot of new clients that are fearful because they've never been in this position before. Families who have never been out of a job, now they're having to ask for help.
That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
President Trump isn't holding big campaign rallies, but his re-election team has built a massive online world where his supporters can get fired up.
Why do Democrats insist on keeping people out of work, holding them hostage over ridiculous demands?
So how does Joe Biden's campaign stack up? A look at both sides of the presidential race competing virtually this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Restaurants across the country are being allowed to reopen. But what's it going to take for you to show up and sit down?
It's really sad to see the chairs piled up and the tables pulled away and no one dining.
U.S. households used to spend $3,000 a year eating out. Is both the price and the risk now too high? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, our friends over at the magazine Edible Northeast Florida have been cooking up something new over the last few weeks, and they've got a big announcement. Editor Lauren Titus is on the line. Hey, Lauren.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. Edible Northeast Florida is just an incredible magazine and really captures the heart of this culinary community and the farming community in our area. And you've been putting out amazing content all through the last several months, but you've got something new to share. What is it?
Yeah, so, you know, with the stay-at-home orders, our ability to get out and work on our next issue was slightly curtailed. And along with everyone else in the area, or across the world, actually, we found ourselves cooking at home a lot more. So we decided to shift our focus and our energies to create our first ever cookbook, Provisions, a cookbook for all seasons, is being released today. It's a digital cookbook, and it's really a testament to the culinary talents throughout our region. We've curated a collection of over 90 recipes. Some are new to the cookbook. Some are old favorites that we've shared through the issues over the past 5 years of publishing the magazine. But we wanted to focus on being a resource for cooks at home, whether it's a seasoned cook who is frankly running out of ideas of things to cook, mm-hmm. or like many folks, learning their way around the kitchen, having to figure out what to stock their pantry with in order to put good and healthy meals on the table every night.
And as you said, we're doing a lot more of that, but we are kind of making the same things over and over again. So this is a year-round cookbook, and you really have highlighted local produce, local artisans, because that's what you're all about.
Exactly. Yeah. So the contributors to the cookbook are professional chefs, food makers, and home cooks throughout the area. And we've organized the book with a full year of what's in season that you'll find at the local markets, a guide to stocking your pantry, fridge, and freezer. And then the recipes themselves are divided up by ingredient categories. So if you happen to have some greens on hand, go to the greens and beans section. If you're looking for alternative proteins like tofu or tempeh, we've got those covered too. It's really a testament to how talented our food makers are throughout the area. And I did want to mention also, because it's digital, we're able to link to the businesses that have contributed recipes or our loyal advertisers who make every issue possible and who have also made the cookbook itself possible.
You can find the new cookbook at the website, which is edibleneflorida.com. I'm looking at the website, Lauren, and I don't see it. Where do we click to find Provisions?
It's going to be right on the homepage. We're in the process of finalizing some last-minute entries, and it will be up probably within the next couple of hours.
Excellent. And so
it's going to be right in the center.
You've still got chefs submitting their recipes to you then.
Yes, they're pretty excited about being able to share some of the things that they've been making at home over the past 2 months. Even though they're anxious to get back to cooking for their guests, they've also been busy in their home kitchens, and we have some of their recipes that they wanted to share with us.
One silver lining in this pandemic has been the way it has really forced people to commune around a good meal, get into the kitchen with their kids, you know, try some recipes they've always wanted to try, take a virtual cooking class. Jennifer Ernest of Jacksonville Catering has been doing some great ones, and there are others too. Are you getting that kind of feedback from your edible community that they're actually enjoying this aspect of this time?
They are. As much as people love to go to the restaurants and have food prepared for them, we're seeing a real growth in the interest of people cooking at home. Even folks who really are not sure which knife to use or, you know, how to saute or some other cooking techniques, we're finding that folks really are enjoying being able to learn how to use the ingredients and share those with their family. And as for the cooking classes, I actually took one with Rebecca Reed from the Black Sheep Restaurant Group, and I learned how to make something that I've always wanted to know how to make, chocolate vodka. So it was really enjoyable.
I know. I there are several things on my list that I want to still make, and I'm definitely going to be downloading your new cookbook. It's called Provisions, A Cookbook for All Seasons. A brand new digital cookbook highlighting the best local recipes, chefs, and produce here on the First Coast. And it will be up today at edibleneflorida.com. Check it out. It's free, and it celebrates this culinary community, as does edible editor Lauren Titus. So good to talk to you, Lauren. Thanks for this amazing gift to the community.
Thank you, Melissa, and thanks for sharing it with everyone.
And that's our show. Get to cooking, everybody. And thanks to all of our guests and callers, plus producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, station news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. If you missed anything, catch our podcast later today at wjct.org or wherever your podcasts are found. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and connect with you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.